Welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today with Ed Moya, Senior Market Analyst over at Oanda. And Ed, let's start off by recapping generally some of the recent central bank moves that are just further QE, where central banks are continuing to try to save these markets, or I guess at worst, stabilize these markets and the economic impact that the coronavirus is going to have. We recently had the Bank of England. They cut rates. They also raised their purchases of bonds. ECB yesterday actually made some more moves to free up capital for these markets. As I said, trying to stabilize what's going on here. Unfortunately, these central bank moves don't seem to have any impact, at least longer than a day or a couple hours. And sometimes they've just instilled more fear in the markets. Let's get your recap of central banks, their move to QE, and how you think this could all play out.
Yes, and more than happy to. And I think when we take a look at just a lot of this central bank action, it's being piecemealed. And what we're seeing is all these intra-policy moves. Bank of England really kind of late to the party. They're just catching up. They cut their rates again. And as they expand their bond purchases, it really shows you that they underestimated their strategy in tackling the virus. I think right now you're seeing a pretty much a unified approach where central banks are just exhausting every measure possible in hopes that you'll also see governments finally deliver some virus relief and have a significant fiscal response. So once the central banks pretty much use all their bullets, you're going to see them be more than easily able to say, government, it's time for you to act. And that's what you're starting to see across the board. I think when we take a look at the Fed, it seems like every other day they have a major announcement. Today, the Federal Reserve, they and pretty much established up to $60 billion swap line with other central banks. The problem is, I think what you're seeing is a lot of these actions have been rushed upon, and central banks didn't necessarily kind of really map out, well, how will the market react? What other strains will this put on? Well, today's action from the central banks is kind of sparing emerging markets. When the Fed first kind of rushed to tackle the virus, they pretty much had a significant omitting of the developing nations, and you saw emerging markets really take a big hit. You're seeing an overvalued dollar here, and a lot of that is because some of these measures did not include coordination with some of these other central banks. So everyone focuses on the G7, but it's also important to focus on Brazil, Mexico, and Korea. So I think you're seeing it seems like every other day you have a major breaking news announcement of, okay, this new major policy move and this new method to kind of alleviate some of the strains in the liquidity markets. And I think right now when we take a look at, well, you know, we're not necessarily seeing another 1,000-point drop in the Dow, and why is that? And it's there is some exhaustion coming in. We're down over 30% from these record highs, and I think you're starting to see that the response from Washington is slow, but they are gaining some traction. They kind of have a four-phase approach on kind of trying to provide some relief for the COVID-19, and right now they kind of wrapped up the first two phases. Now it's the big phase. This is the economic support, helicopter money. Are we going to see this come into place? How effective is this going to be? Well, this is the government going all in, and if we do see helicopter money, I think that is going to provide some longer-term support for equities, and that's why you're starting to see probably some passive investors say, well, we're over 30% from these record highs. Maybe we'll go down 40. Maybe we'll see further weakness. But there's a lot of, historians where you say, well, how do we compare this crash, this market correction to some of the other historical drop downs that we've seen? And when we compare it to the global financial crisis, we saw pretty much the S&P 500 come over 55% from its record highs from the 2007 high to the 2008 low. And I think you're going to see that, you know, investors are going to say, well, if we do go down 40%, maybe it would go to 50, but is it going to be much beyond that? So if you're thinking long term, you're probably going to say, well, maybe this is a good time to start scaling into back into the market. And right now, though, it's extremely volatile. We have no idea what is going to how this virus is going to unfold. And I think that you're still going to see markets remain nervous as long as, well, no one has an idea on how long we're going to see, you know, daily life be disrupted here. And if we see New Yorkers and much of the U.S. stay locked in their homes until the end of summer, you know, that is something that will probably warrant further risk-averse feelings.
Now, isn't this the big problem, though, is that we don't know how long this virus is going to hang around. We don't know how long, essentially, the world is going to be shut down. But central banks and governments are doing almost everything they can in terms of easy money policies to stabilize these markets, and they're not working. Just how much longer can they continue to open up the floodgates without seeing any sort of response? And especially because they just can't control this virus and how long it'll be around for.
Exactly. And I think you have to remember there's so many variables that the scientists won't be able to answer in the next month. Reinfection, how is that going to play out? Seasonality is, you know, is I think a lot of people are putting a lot of hopes that, you know, this will mirror a lot of these modern era pandemics where, you know, it's around for 6 months or so, let's say, roughly. So, you know, we're seeing China, you know, they had their big moment in the headlines yesterday when they announced that they had no new cases after, you know, the 2 months of lockdown. And I think you know, there's going to be a lot of question on the Chinese numbers. There's going to be a lot. They're showing videos of kids playing in the park now. You know, we don't know. We don't know exactly. Will this virus change? I think that the problem is that you're going to see reinfection be another story that just you won't be able to shake for quite some time until you have vaccines or treatments, which, you know, no one is saying that will happen before a year. Now, obviously, some of the treatments that are around that have already been passed that, you know, treated other diseases, those might get the green light. And if that's the case, then you'll see a lot more optimism in the market a lot faster. And I think there is some hope that you might see some of the existing treatments, and I'm blanking on the names of the two that are currently pending right now, but I think there's just too much uncertainty right now to feel that you can really have a handle on how this will play out. I think you have to think long term. You have to think exactly if this virus has a best case scenario, if it has, and what's the worst case. If you try to price something in the middle, maybe that will be a good area to you know, make some decisions on. But I think right now you can't really put a specific target as far as where you'll see the market rebound to. We don't know if we'll have a U-shaped, an L-shaped, or even a W-shaped recovery. So I think that there's just too much uncertainty right now. But the thing is, volatility is here, and you know, for the active investors, they're just trying to capture, you know, big portions of these moves without getting burned once you see one of those major momentum trades.
Yeah, fair enough. It's tough for traders right now because we're seeing, well, circuit breakers hit on many days now. The Dow's already been through a 1,000-point swing today, or almost a 1,000-point swing, and that pales in comparison to the last 5-6 trading days. Related to things shutting down or people staying home, the New York Stock Exchange announced that they will have no more floor traders. I've seen some people write some things that, hey, this could be the start of shutting down these markets. markets, or this could have a big impact, increasing volatility. Do you subscribe to any of these theories?
I think it's more of a symbolic gesture. I think that you had a couple floor traders come down with the virus. I think, for the most part, everything is automated. It's more for the TVs. I think you really won't see that much of a disruption. I think investors take some will take that as a sign that it should raise concern that, well, what happens if there's a problem with the electronic trading systems? You still need people, but right now I think there is confidence that it's more of a symbolic sign that this virus is here. It's going to be here for a while, and if the government is pushing all these precautions, and if you're seeing floor traders come down with the virus, you need to do what's right if you're trying to do social distancing. And whether we see further measures to make the public stay home, as you're seeing in some regions, some people are not really observing to social distancing, and the strain on the healthcare capacity is a true risk, and you're gonna probably see governments try to do everything in their power to make sure that we don't have the American doctors be in the position where the Italians were, where they have to decide who is going to be able to try to get some treatments and who is it too late for. So I think you really don't want to have that. And I think you're probably going to see more greater calls for seeing people just stay at home, and you're probably not going to be seeing I think the anchors behind these stock exchanges, and probably in the coming weeks. So I think it's going to be more of a new life that we're going to have to adjust to. But right now there's several weeks of uncertainty on how this virus is going to evolve here in the U.S. and globally. And I think right now you're going to see a lot of it be focused on the virus, and we'll see what's the next steps at the state and state officials are going to make, and we'll see if the president has any strong decisions that he'll finally unveil.
Hey, you know what? It is all about the virus and just how much of a devastating impact it could have on the healthcare system. I also wonder just how long people are willing to stay home once the weather gets better, once summer comes, if everyone is going to say, you know what? Fine, we are going to stay home. I could see that starting, or at least some people starting to say, I'm not staying home anymore. And that could throw this whole quarantine into, even more of a question mark. Now, as much as everything seems to be about the virus, there's also an oil price war going on. Just the worst time for this to happen in the oil market. Oil's actually bouncing today, but it came very close to breaking that $20 a barrel level yesterday. What is your outlook for oil here? Do you think that a bottom is in place?
Oil has been a fascinating trade. So yesterday, we saw prices crashed 24%. No circuit breakers for oil traders. And what we're seeing is there's, as we kind of, talked about before, the virus. There's no timeline on when will we see a return of travel. We don't know when people are going to go back in their cars and drive to work and go on holiday summer vacations. We don't know when the airline businesses, which ones are going to survive, and when are we going to see normal air travel. And the demand destruction, devastation, is going to be in place for quite some time. And you have, on the supply side, Saudi Arabia ramping up production, Russia ramping up production because they're all trying to get market share. And then you have the U.S. shale industry, which is going to get crippled because a lot of companies are going to go out of business. But in the short term, what you're going to see is all these shale producers, they're scrambling for cash. Well, if you're a shale producer, what are you going to do? You're going to have more product out there because you're going to do whatever you can to generate any type of income. And you're going to continue to see the U.S. market be oversupplied. So You have oversupply, concerns not going away anytime soon, and that's why you've seen this collapse in oil prices. Now the question is, well, it's obviously not going to go negative. How low can it go? I think you're going to see a lot of people focus on, well, what does the rest of the energy producing world need? Well, right now you're pretty much seeing, well, I think the focus is going to be on Saudi Arabia and Aramco. You know, ex dividend, they need $15 oil. So to make oil, the Saudis can do it in single digits. But if they want the Aramco IPO or the Aramco stock to be successful, they need to have oil at around $15. The rest of the energy producers, they pretty much need prices closer to $30. So we're at a pain threshold where you could say if we did break 20, that you would probably see the Saudis be willing to meet with the other OPEC producing members. Maybe they'll just say, forget Russia. We still need to do something without them. But I think you're almost at that point. But there could still be weakness. It's going to be a very difficult trade, and I think that the bearish drivers are not going away anytime soon. So you could see some short covering. You could see some bottom feeders trying to just time a longer term trade. But super contangos are in place, and you're going to see probably expectations remain that, you know, we're going to have low oil prices for the next few years, and there's no real reason to turn optimistic on that in the short term. So I think you're going to see markets kind of react to if we start to see the Saudis return to the negotiating table, and if Russia, who has had they have made some comments that they're watching the oil markets, they're concerned about where prices are. So maybe the Russians are willing to kind of do something. Maybe they're confident that they're going to recover a lot of the lost market share that has happened since the 3 years of coordinated production cuts have really saw the OPEC plus people lose half their market share, while the U.S. has really doubled. So you're probably going to see some constructive comments, I think, from both sides. So there could be some calls for a little bit of a bottom, tentative or short-term bottom in place. But I think the oversupply concerns should remain having a lot of these bounces faded. And remember, like today prices are up, you know, if you're up 10%, you know, that might only be like a couple of dollars. So we've come down from a long way, and we're probably going to see heavy prices for some time. But the one thing is, it will remain one of the more volatile trades, because there are no circuit breakers, and you're probably going to see this remain a key, you know, trading opportunity for many active investors.
Yeah, it's tough right now for oil because, hey, there's a supply war, but then the demand side is also getting devastated by everybody staying at home and essentially not being able to get to work or go to work. So the oil picture is tough, but just how low can it go, I think, is the big question here. Ed, it's great chatting with you. Thanks for spending some time this morning. I know it's a very uncertain market, but at least the markets are still open, so it gives us something to chat about. Ed, have a great rest of your week. We'll chat again next week.
Thanks, Corey.